welcome to Travel Fun. My name is Maribeth Clementi, and I'm the host of this talk show on travel. And since it's the holiday time, I am doing a program on food. And why not French food, since most of you know that I have a love of France. And I have Holly Herrick on the line from Charleston, South Carolina. She is a food writer, author. She has authored two books so far in the French cookbook series, with two others on the way. She is also going, so of course she's talking about French cooking, and she is going to be talking about Charleston, South Carolina as well, the food scene there. I would like to welcome Holly Herrick to Travel Fun. Hi, Holly.
Hi, Maribeth. It's lovely to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, I think it's very nice as well. You sent me this beautiful book, The French Cook, which is so enticing, both in word and pictures. It's just luscious. This is your book on cream puffs and eclairs.
And thank you.
You did a lovely job with it. And cookbooks are such a treat for people. And so certainly this is a nice gift idea and also inspiration for people to put, maybe take their holiday baking up a notch or two.
Yes, hopefully. I mean, that's the plan. Always, actually my sixth cookbook, but guess if you say the second in the series. But
It's your sixth, however, the second in the series of the French cookbook series.
But it's always my goal is to get people really excited about cooking and enjoy it and have fun and, you know, make it be fun and delicious and hopefully nutritious, although that's a little bit more challenging with cream puffs and eclairs, although we do have some savory in the book as well.
Well, the pastry is light and airy in any event.
Right.
Holly, how did you become a food writer?
Well, I basically grew up believing I would be a writer on some level, but probably a journalist. And I studied journalism in college, at Boston College. And I was pretty much sure that's exactly what I was going to do. But, you know, like so many people in life and seemingly, especially every single food writer or food professional I know, including chefs, with a few exceptions, had never anticipated that they'd be doing what they're doing. And I guess I'm one of them. I basically did the whole journalism thing and then got married after a career in advertising sales, which I was doing mostly for the money, frankly. It was a great job. I had a little window to take a break and reconnect with my love of cooking, which I nurtured as a child, mostly with my Nana, but we also had a garden. You know, we're really close to the land. And I went, as I think we talked about before, I just started thinking. I'd moved from New York. I'd left this career, and I really didn't have a job, and I was loving feeding my husband, and my new husband, and I was cooking for him and nurturing him, and I was thinking, you know, maybe I need to get into food writing. So I was cooking like crazy in those days for those first few months and went to a food festival in Aspen, food and wine festival. I think it must have been like a second or third year. It's when all of those were really in their infancy. It would have been about 1990. And Julia Child, whom I'd always adored, was teaching there. And I got up the nerve to ask her after a demonstration what I should do to get my credentials for food writing. And she was so generous with her time and her advice. And she said, can you get to the Cordon Bleu in Paris? And, you know, I consulted with my husband, and it all worked out. And I did go, and I thought I would just go for 3 months after her advice, just to get my basic cuisine training, which is where we learned pâte à choux, by the way, for eclairs and cream puffs. So it is actually not complicated. But I ended up staying for the whole Grand Diplôme and getting very serious about cooking for about 7 years, cooking in restaurants and living in France, not just Paris. And it wasn't until after that I just decided it was really this time to get writing. So I did. I started writing columns. I was living in Wyoming at that point, doing some tours in France, and eventually moved here to Charleston about 14 years ago and really got into restaurant review writing, food and travel writing, and now, and then in the last several years, it's been cookbooks. So I'm starting, I'm underway with my seventh now, the third in the French Cook series on soups and potage. So it's a lot of cooking in my world these days.
Well,
it's been fun.
I love that story, how you met Julia Child at the Aspen Food and Wine Festival and how she was suggesting you find your way to the Cordon Bleu in Paris. And in your book, The French Cook, Cream Puffs and Eclairs, you start off early on in the book with a quote from her that was...
I think it's a great quote. Excuse me, were you going to read it? It's not my cookbook right here. I can read it.
Oh, okay. I'd prefer you to read it if you have it handy.
Okay. Well, I struggled. You know, I like to start, this is every single one of my books. It's a tradition. I start with a quote that I think really is a summary of whatever the subject matter is in the book. And I really struggled to find a really good one for Shu. And I pulled out my favorite cookbook in the whole entire world, including my own. I mean, I love mine, but it's like it almost being too close to it, you know, a little bit. But I love The Way to Cook by Julia. And it's in there, her introduction to Shu pastry is, she describes it this way, and I think it's so on the money. Quote, happily, Shu is one of the easiest, which is spelled C-H-O-U-X, by the way, for your listeners, is one of the easiest pastries to make. Bring a little water and butter to a simmer in a saucepan. Dump in flour, beat over heat to thicken it, and whip in a few eggs. That's all there is to it. And that's Julia from the book in 1989. And, it, you know, it's so typical of Julia. It's so on the money. It is, it's basically a get in there, get your muscle grease going on, your elbow grease going on, because the whole point of it is to basically activate the gluten in the flour, get the high-protein flour, get the eggs incorporated, because it's the eggs that give it the lift and that beautiful airiness and lightness you were describing earlier. So it's a messy, fun pastry. I love it.
Well, that's why I thought this would be very appropriate for the holidays, because I, growing up, I did a lot of baking with my mom, and we did a lot of the classic Christmas cookies. However, I remember... one year when she really went all out on the French recipes. And indeed, we did do eclairs. And it was just such a fun project to do. And and then afterwards, it was so delightful to have them and taste them. And they were just marvelous. And I think whether you're having a party or just want to have a little bit of fun, the idea of doing choux, which is the light French pastry, in the form of many different forms that you explore in this book, or most people know about eclairs. It's really very festive. So let's talk more about the choux, C-H-O-U-X, which actually is also a term of endearment in French.
Yes, I want to teach you my little cabbage. Yes, again, so many nuances in the French language. It's so much fun because so many of them find their way into cooking, which in French cooking, you know, because language and passion and cooking, they're also very intertwined in that culture. There's a real love of language and cooking, and so they kind of come together in the most beautiful way. So it's basically, it's really a dough before it's cooked, and then as it's cooking, it really becomes light and pastry like. It's got air pockets in it. It's not free of calories, but it's wonderfully light. But as for a cook and for entertaining, I think one of its best virtues is that in its baked form, which would be eclairs and cream puffs, it can be completely made ahead, cooked ahead, cooled off, and then frozen, and if days, weeks ahead. And I always have some eclairs and cream puffs, sweet and savory, in my freezer, because then if you just have a quick, sudden, last minute something show up, like I did this actually for Thanksgiving, I had some leftover boursin cheese, or I didn't want to do something heavy, and I had some leftover savory petite declares that I've done, well, it's a long story, I won't bore you all with that, but I simply cut them in half and filled them with the boisson, and it made a lovely little starter with boot champagne, and everybody just had a little something to eat without feeling full.
That's wonderful, because that was one of the questions I was going to ask you, if when you make these pastries, if you have to eat them the day of, but that...
No.
So the trick of freezing them.
Yes, and then you just take them out. It doesn't matter what size or what shape. I mean, another wonderful thing about choux pastry is it can be piped into rings. I don't think people think about that, almost to make like a little bread for a Nichois salad. All of them can be frozen. But the key is that they go in, you know, cool, because you don't want them steep. I put mine in freezer, those heavy-duty freezer bags with the Ziploc. They just go in cool, you know, not steaming. And, you know, you need to not treat them with care so they're not all crunched up when they come out. But just take them out as you need them. I thaw them, which takes just minutes, 10, at room temperature. And I give mine just a quick little zap in the oven to crisp them up for about 3 minutes in a 425 oven. And that's that. And the other incredibly wonderful thing about them, which I think we as Americans probably think of them less as a savory option. But the truth is that the pastry, the dough, is very much an outstanding vehicle for savory flavoring. I have several, and half the book is, half of my book anyway, is dedicated to savory fillings and seasonings for the dough, just fresh herbs, or one of mine has three cheeses and some fresh ground black pepper in it for jugère. You can even pipe it or plop it out on a spoon into some simmering water to make gnocchi. In fact, I'm going to be teaching that tonight in cooking class. It's just an amazingly versatile and easy and forgiving pastry, and it's also extremely economically. It costs nothing to buy the ingredients to make it. Can you tell I love it?
I'm just getting all worked up about these choux. I can put some in the freezer and all that. That sounds like so much fun. So how easy is it to bake these at altitude, at elevation?
They should not be sensitive at altitude. As you know, I live in Wyoming, in the mountains, and, you know, it's like 13,000 square feet. Is it that high in Jackson? So it's really high, maybe 11,000 high. It should not be an altitude problem. It's like I said, an extremely forgiving pastry. You probably have more difficulty with, you know, standard bread baking, which I have had issues with at altitude in the past. You know, I haven't made it at altitude, so I can't at a very high altitude. I mean, I live in the low country, but here we have, you know, so we're almost below seawater level here, but we also have extremely high humidity, which can be a problem with leavening, with baking.
Oh, and right, that is a problem.
But with no problems. I mean, it's just maybe the most resilient pastry out there. I mean, really, it's just... I actually did a speaking engagement last week, and as part of the, they served a meal at a local church, actually. It's a wonderful church, and these churchmen do all the cooking, and they use the jugère recipe I just talked about. This is probably not going to be a great example, because I was just saying you can't go wrong with it. But somehow they managed to go wrong. I don't know what happened. I think this man doesn't eat. The man that headed the crew is one of those people that really abhors following a recipe and kind of just dumped it all in there and didn't really measure it. Like most pastries, you do have to measure it.
Right. With baking,
Most pastries. Yeah. I mean, like I said, it was in basic cuisine. It was like one of the first, I think within the first month of our curriculum, which was a 3 month long, the basic cuisine is 3 months long. It was in the curriculum within the first several weeks of cooking school. So I kind of went off track here a little bit. Yeah, as long as you respect the ratios of the, you know, the measurements, which is basically high gluten flour. I use bread flour mixed with AP because you actually want a higher gluten to build the structure of the pastry that the eggs are going to kind of inflate. And as long as you do that and pipe it out and get it in the oven fairly quickly while it's still warm, there's really no way to go wrong. I just think you didn't measure.
I have a smile on my lips as you're talking about the high gluten flour. I love it because everywhere you go, you see something that's gluten free. And I think that's great to have it for people that can't tolerate it. But for those that can tolerate it just fine, it's like, give me my butter, sugar, my gluten, and all the rest.
I know. And I actually had people asking me about ways to make non-gluten or low-gluten cream puffs as I was going along and coming up with recipes for this book. And apparently there are ways to do it. This is not a low-gluten book, or a non-gluten book or gluten-free book. But there are alternatives, I believe, using almond. I've been told it can be done. I haven't done it. I honestly don't know how you could possibly do it without gluten.
Right. And
that's the structure.
You are classically French trained at the Cordon Bleu, mm-hmm. and I doubt that that's entered into their practices much. I am talking with Holly Herrick, cookbook author, food writer, and we have been talking about her recent book, The French Cook, Cream Puffs and Eclairs, and with many marvelous recipes for the holidays. And you mentioned the gougère, which I just love. You can gobble them up. And I saw in your book you have chouquette, which are similar to gougère, but a sweet version. Now, Holly, tell me, do I need a pastry bag for these? I don't have a pastry bag.
Yeah. Well, no, you don't. And I spent a few pages in the book anyway. It's not the whole series are intended to be fairly short books, I think 128 pages, but they get a lot of information, hopefully very good and useful information. I give my readers the option to pipe or, as I rather non-sexually put it, plop their shoe, because it can be, my grandmother anyway didn't pipe anything. She was a plopper, biscuits, dumplings, shoe. And really, especially for cream puffs, no matter what size, if you have a spoon, a tablespoon, or a teaspoon, just a regular kitchen variety, nothing fancy, nothing gourmet, and you dip it in a little water, it needs to be wet, or otherwise the pastry will stick to the spoon to make it messy. And just dip that into the warm shoe pastry and plop it on a pastry, a baking sheet. It does need to be lined either with, I use Silpat, which sounds super fancy, but you could also use not wax paper. It doesn't work too well. Parchment paper is better.
Okay.
And just do it that way. Eclairs are a little bit harder to form that way because it's just harder to form sort of neat little oblong forms with spoons, but it sort of can be done. But the other thing is, too, and there's a whole, in the book, there's a whole, and possible things that you might need to use in your shoe kitchen. I personally, when I am piping, and I tend to, especially with the book, I did mostly piping just because it's just quicker and more efficient once you get used to it. It does take a little while to get used to it. But they have these wonderful plastic piping bags out there. There's, I'm super hyper conscious of the environment, and I hate throwing away plastic, but it's extremely difficult to clean a linen pastry bag that's been full of shoe pastry because it's so sticky. So you can plop. You also don't have to pipe the actual filling into a cream puff or an eclair. I give my readers and real people the option to just kind of cut it in half and fill it almost as if you consider it like a little baby sandwich and then just put the top back on it. Mm. So that it works just fine that way.
This is sounding like fun.
It is fun.
It sounds like a project for mother-daughter, that sort of thing around the holidays.
Yes.
Holly, talk more about your French experience.
Oh, gosh, there's my dog. Sorry.
That's okay. I bet he likes shoe as well.
He does. He's a real shoemonger, and also he snuck not a small amount of shoe off the cooling tray while we were working on this book. His name is Tan Man. He's a little chocolate cocker spaniel. Yeah, actually, and dogs, you know, dogs are loved in France and invited in many restaurants really everywhere. So I guess there's a segue there. France, yeah, well, you know, cooking school was marvelous. It defies words. It was soulful, magical, fun. I mean, I couldn't wait for every day that began to learn more things and to explore Paris. What a beautiful, beautiful city. I made lots of great friends at cooking school and was very sad to say goodbye when that ended. But eventually, my husband and I found our way to South Central France in La Vallée-Croisillon.
That's one of my favorite regions.
It's so beautiful. Hey, Qatar, with all the old, you know, the abandoned heritage chateau that, it's just so, again, very soulful. It is beautiful. And eventually, at some point, I was spending roughly about half a year going back and forth doing recipe development for a cookbook that I actually never published called La Vie est Belle. But anyway, it's full of great recipes. Nonetheless, I was very young. It was very early in my career at that point. But it was just, you know, I mean, great friends. I was in this tiny little village called Chalab. Are you familiar with it? It's tiny. It's, like maybe 600, maybe, well, no, not 600. I don't know, 400 people at the foothills of the Pyrenees. They are about an hour south of Toulouse. Anyway, all around it, there were marchés, little shop, little open-air markets that were open every day. And I was just going by foie gras and prunes and truffles and, gorgeousness that I would cook with every day. There were so many crazy, funny stories being American in France, but, I could go on and on. I'm not sure all of it's really publishable.
Your main attraction to France is via the food and the food culture.
Yes, and the very cute and charming French chefs. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize French chefs were cute and charming.
Well, certainly at Cordon Bleu, they were. I mean, they were all very, of course, they were all male then. I'm not sure that that's still the case, but I hope it's not, because it'd be nice to have, you know, a French woman chef teaching others how to cook as well. But anyway, all of these men that were teaching me back in the day, this is about 20 years ago now, but they, like most French chefs, and I think this is part of why they're so charming, they start, and this continues to this day, but they, unlike here and even other parts of the world, the way that their culture and educational system is set up, they start as very young boys, 12 years old, apprenticing in kitchens, and it's almost like a knighthood. I think it's a very revered thing. You know, it's becoming very celebrity cultish here in this country now, and for the last 10 years. But when I started out, it wasn't like that at all. So they've all worked extremely hard, and they all know a lot about their craft, and they have a huge love of their craft. And, you know, strangely, oddly, go figure, they're just exceptionally charming and rarely is there an unattractive one.
Well, I'm so that sounds as though it was the cerise sur le gâteau, the cherry on the cake. That's perfect. I am visiting with Holly Herrick. And Holly, let's provide your website. It's hollyherrick.com, right?
That's correct. HollyHerrick.com.
Right. And you have a blog and your cookbooks are showcased there. And I'm going to be posting this interview at my blog at bonjourcolorado.com. Holly, briefly, you're on the phone from Charleston, South Carolina, a wonderful town. And talk a little bit about the food scene there.
Yes, I've been here 14 years, and it's just gone through probably at least five renaissance in that period of time. Each one, I think lately, just the latest one in the last couple of years, moving very much towards on the one hand, very much a rebirth of grassroots Southern cooking, like real Southern cooking, like real Southern cooking the Charleston way, which is different because of the way that we don't have enough time to talk about it, because of the history of this town and
the real rich cooking, the Paula Deen style cooking?
No, not at all like that. It's not at all that sort of cliche Southern cooking that the chefs are exploring here now more. Chefs like Sean Brock at Husk and others. Yeah, fried chicken for sure, but very much indigenous ingredients, nothing out of a box, of course. Pickled things, ramps, seasonal stuff, but a lot of exploration of the history going back to colonial times, because Charleston was a very old colonial city. I think a lot of people think of it more as antebellum, but it's pretty much a foreigner colonial city, very wealthy, brought a lot of different ingredients into the city via the very active port during the 17th century. So there's a very almost obsessive pull for the chefs and the restaurant community and the food community here to re-embrace that. And but then on the other hand, Charleston's growing in terms of its and continues to, and has since I moved here, and of course has for a long time, but is becoming much more international in terms of its awareness and the people that come here and eat here and stay here and spend money here. So there's much more breadth in terms of the ethnicity of our restaurants now. Hello, thank goodness. I'm so happy about that because I love, having lived in New York and just having a palate that loves heat and spice and diversity, I'm loving that too. So it's becoming very, very, very grown up, but also taking itself increasingly less seriously. I think about 5 or 6 years ago, when Charleston really got on the map with the Food and Wine Festival and some of our more recognized chefs, it was like almost getting a little bit snooty. But then a lot of things happened. I think a big one was the big recession that struck the whole country, and I think palates and budgets changed. So it's just becoming very grassroots-y, but yet sophisticated, Southern with a twist, but a very, very native Charlestonian twist. It's very difficult to describe. It's definitely worth visiting, really, anytime.
Holly, do you sometimes blog about Charleston and cooking in the South at hollyherrick.com?
Yes, although I've been so entrenched in the books the last several months, but I am working on the Sticks of Guitar, so lately I've been blogging mostly with recipes for the upcoming books. However, I've got my next project is going to be a revision of one of my books on Charleston, so I'll be jumping back into that in the next couple months. But yeah, I'm always in there on that topic. I love this city. I love Charleston. I'm very, very blessed because I kind of lucked out and happened upon Charleston, just like I kind of lucked out and happened upon Paris. And they're both sort of, even though I'm from New England and born in Alabama, they feel like my soul cities, I call them. They feel like my real home.
I can see the connection there. I am visiting with Holly Herrick. And Holly's website is hollyherrick.com. Herrick is H-E-R-R-I-C-K. And I'm going to be posting this podcast at my blog, bonjourcolorado.com. And Holly, I'm going to get in the kitchen and start whipping up some of those choux.
Good.
You've inspired me. Thank you for doing such a beautiful book, The French Cook, Cream Puffs and Eclairs. And have a happy holiday season.
You too, Mama. Thank you so very much. And stay warm out there.
Yes, and thank you for being a guest on Travel Fun.
Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bon appétit.
Bon appétit.
Come fly with me. Let's fly. Let's fly away.
You can use some exotic booze. There's a bar in far Bombay.
Come on, fly with me. We'll float down.